Christmas, and I am not Sherry Francisco.
We'll let you introduce yourself at the beginning of the meeting, but you should be able to, I think,
change that.
If you click, I don't know. I don't know how to do it in regular Teams, actually. There should be a settings thing up toward the top, probably. Yeah, if you click on the three little dots where it says more up at the top.
Yeah.
Go to settings, it may give you an opportunity to rename. We don't get that opportunity because ours are just done by the state. So I don't have that privilege, but I think that's how you do it in real people teams.
Yeah. And it only talks about accessibility. I'll look around. I'll find it.
Okay. Cool. Okay, we are missing both of our legislative members, which means, as far as I know, we don't actually have quorum, because I'm ex officio and Ms. Leslie, you're ex officio, right? So, okay, well, have we heard from Senator Taylor, Representative Nathanson, that they're actually joining us?
They did accept the meeting, both
Thank
of them.
You. Okay. All right. Well, we'll just be patient then. Not much else to do.
Rep Nathanson just joined.
Oh, great. Okay. So now we have quorum. This is lovely. Hello, Representative Nathanson. Nice to see you again. Okay. Then shall we get started, folks?
Sure.
Great. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I am State Treasurer Elizabeth Steiner, and I'm calling a meeting of the State Debt Policy Advisory Commission to order. I'd like to say hello to our commissioners and have everybody introduce themselves. We have some new folks, and I want to make sure that everybody knows that this meeting is being recorded in compliance with public meeting law. Mr. Vasanth, can you call the roll, please?
Yes, I'm doing a roll call now. I see Treasurer Steiner. I see Director Berry and Rep Nathanson. And I see Senator Taylor also, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I have never seen Professor Kochiowski before. So if you can identify yourself, I'll be grateful.
Yes, and I apologize with the name there. It should be Tom Potowski, and I'm afraid the only way I can get rid of it is that I'd have to leave and then come back in. But if you're okay with call, I can be called Sherry. I'm fine with that.
we will happily call you Mr. Potowski. It's all good. Or Dr. Potowski. Yeah, great. Thank you very much. The goal of this meeting is, the plan is to make sure that we have an opportunity to review the draft report that Mr. Alvarez and his excellent team prepared and sent out to all the commissioners. And this presentation that they'll be giving to us is a summary of that report. Our goal is to review that summary, ask questions if we have them. Of Mr. Alvarez and his team, discuss any proposed changes or clarifications to the report, and then I'll be asking the three voting members, Senator Taylor, Representative Nathanson, and Mr. Potowski, to vote to accept, to approve the 2025 annual report, subject to the inclusion of any changes that you all want to submit, which we'll be discussing. So I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page. Any questions or concerns about that? Nifty. Then I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Alvarez and his team for your presentation.
Great. Thank you very much. We will share the presentation. So thank you very much. We appreciate the opportunity to present to you all today. And for the record, my name is Jaime Alvarez, the Director of Debt Management Division here at Oregon State Treasury. And also joining us today are some members from debt management team who will help present today. We have Keturah Vasant, who is the deputy director of our group, Colin Kusar, debt manager, and Michael Thompson, who's the senior debt analyst. As the treasurer mentioned, a copy of the report was circulated on last Friday, the 10th. So if you've not received it, please let us know. We'll make sure a copy is sent to you all. So before I begin, I wanted to touch on our approach to data integrity. So we understand the importance of presenting accurate information to decision makers and making this and take this responsibility very seriously. We have a process in place where we perform routine data validation annually for our state agencies and semi-annual for the local issuers, local government issuers that we interact with. So obviously data integrity is very important. So we spend a lot of time working with our partners to confirm the accuracy of the information. Again, the presentation today will provide a summary of the circulated report, and our goal is to review the summary, answer any questions, discuss any changes. So commissioners, please feel free to ask any questions or comments as we go through the information. If we go to the next page, next slide, one more. Okay, great. So here we'll look at outstanding debt positions for the state. So we show here the trends of the aggregate state debt levels for the listed type of debt obligations. We have our pension obligation bonds. We have general fund supported and self-supported debt, appropriation debt, which includes certificates of participation, and lastly, direct revenue bonds, which include debt issued by ODOT, housing single family and multifamily programs, lottery, and bond bank. And so in aggregate, there's the estimated outstanding amount is $12.8 billion, and that's as of the end of the 2024 fiscal year. Next slide. On this slide, we'll focus on general obligation debt. As of June 30th, 2024, the state has had approximately $7.7 billion in outstanding GO debt, represented in the chart here. We can break that down to approximately $5.5 billion for general fund supported debt and approximately $2.3 billion for dedicated funds such as Oregon Vets, higher education, pension obligation bonds, and others. So you will notice that in the chart, the portion of that's attributed to Article Q bonds continues to increase, and this is due to continued focus on state-owned and operated property improvements funded through the Article Q bonds. We also fund the LIFT programs through this article, and just an overall increased utilization relative to the other forms of debt listed here. Next slide. Here we have direct revenue bonds. So the breakdown of direct revenue bonds outstanding by individual bond program with approximately $2.5 billion for ODOT, $1.3 billion for lottery revenue bonds, $1.1 for housing, and approximately $48 million for Oregon business. Next slide. Credit ratings. So the table here shows the state's bond credit ratings. They have remained strong and stable. The rating agencies have mentioned a variety of factors that help support the state's high credit quality. So, for example, the state's sound financial controls, stable budgetary positions, and growing reserves, along with a strong liquidity position that's kind of helped us be proactive when challenges arise. Next slide. Conduit revenue bonds. So these bonds are bonds that are issued by a governmental unit to finance a project for a third party. These type of securities are obligations of the third party borrower and do not constitute a debt of the state. So the state currently has 4 active conduit revenue bond programs. These programs are for Oregon Facilities Authority, Industrial Development Revenue Bonds, Housing Development Revenue Bonds, and the Beginning and Expanding Farmer Loan Revenue Bonds. So under these programs, the debt is paid by the entities on whose behalf the bonds are issued. Although the state is considered the issuer, it is no obligation of the state to pay the debt service on these bonds.
Mr. Alvarez, Representative Nathanson has her hand up. Representative Nathanson? Sure.
Thank you. Just a process question. Are these slides posted for us to look at separately, full screen?
Katori, have we posted those on the slide? If not, we will circulate an email to this group so you can have them in your inbox now.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Are you able to see them on screen, though?
Yes. In other legislative meetings, we generally have presentations available so that we can look at either print them to take notes on or look ahead to see, oh, this is slide 7 of 10 or 7 of 50. Thank you.
Our
team will get them in the email to you right away.
We can circulate a copy right now.
Thank you. Sure. And as an aside, folks, I appreciate Representative Nathanson raising your hand. If other commission members have questions, please feel free to raise your hand and I will do my best to see it. But if I don't acknowledge you quickly, please just come off mute and say something so that I can acknowledge you, because I can't see everybody on the screen at once. Thanks, Mr. Alvarez. Go ahead.
Okay. So lastly, as of end of fiscal year 24, for conduit revenue bonds as a whole, we have approximately $3.5 billion outstanding as a state. Next slide. With that, I will pass this over to Katur, who will take us through the general fund section.
Rating agencies look at some key indicators when they determine the rating of a state, and bond investors do the same thing when they look at their buy decision. Total debt to of the state to on a per capita basis, total debt to total personal income, those are all numbers they look at. But one of the key numbers that they look at is also the percentage of debt service to the general fund revenues or the total revenues of the state. Debt service meaning the total interest that's paid during a year plus the principal that's amortized. I'll be talking about the general fund supported debt capacity, and Michael will follow me with the lottery fund capacity. Flipping to the next page, this page here, we start with the total general fund supported debt balance that's outstanding at the end of the fiscal year. That's June 30, 2024. Now, this debt goes all the way through 2049, and each year there's interest that's paid as well as principal that amortizes. All that is taken into account. We also look at the total amount of debt that's been authorized and is supported by the general fund for the debt service payment. That's $2.167 billion. $725 million of that was already issued in fiscal year 2024, leaving $1.4 billion to be issued in fiscal year 2025, with the bulk of it coming through over the next few months. When we look at the composition of this $2.167 billion, $1.4 billion is basically 11Q, a lot of that money going to support the housing initiatives. Then the next key input is the OEA December 2024 forecast of general fund revenue projections over the four future biennia from 2025 to 2033. Then we use two assumptions in the model. One is it's a 20-year horizon, and we also use a 5.5% interest rate. That's the same rate that was used in 2023 and 2024. And there is some cushion on the rate. The underlying benchmark rate is close to 4%, so there's 1.5% of cushion and safety incorporated in this 5.5%. Then the final and the key element is that the target we're solving for is 5% of general fund revenues. And this is something that's remained over the last several years. When OST looked at the percentage, they looked at other states and they said states that have a sound debt management are below 5%. So they denoted 0% to 5% as a green zone, 5% to 7% as yellow, and 7% to 10% as red. And they picked 5% as the top of the green zone that they want to solve the model for. One thing they don't take into account is the starting balance. You know, the money in the rainy day fund or the education stability fund, which adds up to close to $3 billion, or the general fund balance, which is also close to $3 billion, that money is not incorporated into the model. The model is forward-looking. On the next slide, we take a look at the general fund revenues. So Sarah, if you go back to the one with the graph, thank you. So when you look at the graph, you can see that it's one, it's strongly upward sloping because there's growth. Secondly, each forecast has been pushing higher. So OEA forecasts have been revised higher with every new forecast. For example, if we look at the December forecast, it's about $1 billion higher compared to the September forecast. And compared to the end of the last biennium close of session forecast, the total amount has shifted higher by $2.85 billion. A main reason has been that personal and corporate income tax revenues have been coming in very strong. And even looking at the current job growth and withholding tax collections, they are running much higher. Apparently, there was a $1.3 billion Powerball winner somewhere in Oregon, so that adds to it. But even excluding that, the run rate is 6% higher than the prior year. We understand that there's been a change in the methodology with the new economics team. We don't know the insides of the changes, but what was mentioned in the latest forecast is that the personal and corporate income tax models, which took into account capital gains, U.S. equity performance, corporate tax liability, and profits, was somehow not connected as they would like it. So they made some changes. And that has meant that a lot of the numbers have been revised higher. So we take all of that into account. We take the revenue projections as given, and then we come up with the debt capacity. And when we move to the next slide, so this slide shows how much capacity we have over the forecast period being 2026 to 2033. Bottom line is we have $8.9 billion of incremental capacity, which translates to $2.22 billion per biennium or $1.11 billion per annum. By using the average approach, we spread this debt evenly over the years. And because of the shape of the projections of the revenue, we don't reach this 5% target any of these years, which is a good thing. And we end up precisely at 5% at the last year. So if we take the general fund revenue in 2033 of $25.889 billion and apply 5%, the debt service of that per year is exactly equal to that number. I'll spend a minute just talking about the table that we see. So in the first column, we have the years going out to 2033. In the next column, the second column, we have the general fund revenues. And we apply the 5% to these numbers. Then we deduct all the debt service that we have to pay based on this $5.5 billion balance that we start the forecast period with. We also take into account the debt service that's created by issuing whatever the bond bill tells us to. Then we say, okay, for each year going forward, as we issue debt in 2026 and 2027 and 2028, that additional debt creates its own debt service obligations. All that is also subtracted from the general fund 5%. So when we look at the third column, we see because there is a big capacity spike in the early years, we can issue $1.1 billion in 2026, $1 billion in 27, and a big $2.467 billion in 2028. Now, that additional debt, large amounts of debt, creates its own debt service. So it takes away from our capacity in 29, 30, 31, 32. But when we take all of that and solve for the last year, we can still issue $849 million for a total of $8.9 billion for this period of time. And then we just take the average and end up with $1.112 billion that you can see in the column before the last column. The final column just says, okay, how much, what percentage of general fund revenues will the debt service for that particular year use up? And we come up with numbers ranging from starting with 5%, dropping down to 4.7%, and then coming back to 5%. And we do want to get to 5% in the final year. So that's our capacity. Then we do a sensitivity analysis using this $8.9 billion, and that's on the next page. Thank you. So in the first row, you see that our capacity is $8.9 billion, which is $2.225 billion per annum. Then we flex the general fund revenue forecast by reducing it by 10% and also increasing it by 10%. When we have a 10% decline, the capacity drops by $1.548 billion, and the average per biennium is $1.838 billion. If there is an increase, there's a symmetrical increase in the capacity of 1.548, and we get an average of $2.611 billion per biennium. When we move to the interest rate by changing them by 1%, the impact is a little bit less, and it's also not symmetrical. In the first row, we use a 6.5% rate, and we find that the capacity drops by $800 million, and the capacity per biennium is $2 billion. If we use a 4.5% rate, the average per biennium is $2.45 billion. That concludes the general fund capacity section, and I'll stop here if you have any questions, and I'll hand it over to Jaime, and then to Michael from there.
Michael, you can go ahead.
Sounds good. Thank you. Thank you, Couture. Thank you, Jaime. Hi, everybody. My name is Michael Thompson. I am the Senior Debt Analyst in the Debt Management Division of Oregon State Treasury. I just want to say good afternoon to Treasurer Steiner, the commission members, and all of our other friends here on the meeting. Thank you for bearing with us. I know some of this can be kind of dry, but I appreciate you all taking the time and listening to what we have to say. A lot of time has went into this and a lot of good people working on this to present this to you. So if you have any questions now or any in the future, please don't hesitate to let us know. We're more than happy to do whatever we can to answer whatever questions are needed. I want to talk to you about the lottery revenue debt capacity. First things first, for those who aren't really familiar with our lottery program, I just wanted to say that this is a program here in Oregon that funds a lot of things. Not only can you see the projects that are listed there between the state parks, the schools, and education, but as of 2021, which is the most recent figure I could find for checking in on these numbers, 53% of this money has gone to public schools, 25.5% to job creation, over 15% of it to Oregon State Parks and Natural Habitats, and the remainder to outdoor school, veteran services, and problem gambling support. So this is a pretty good program that we have here, and I think Oregon has set up the lottery quite well. The state utilizes lottery revenue, as I said, to issue lottery bonds, which fund programs related to economic development, public education, and environmental welfare. Being able to calculate this capacity allows us to evaluate our stewardship of how the state has bonded debt and planned for future projects. So in this section, we'll review the debt capacity model inputs, the assumptions, and revenue forecast trends contributing to the projected capacity levels and examine factors that could impact these capacity levels over time. It's set up very similar to our general fund program, where we use the OEA's December 2024 forecast over the forecast period, which is FY26 to 23. Excuse me. And as of fiscal year end 2024, we had $1.31 billion, excuse me, of lottery revenue bonds outstanding. This is up from $1.3 billion of the prior year. These bonds have funded many programs, including those listed on the slide and what I said. And in calculating the lottery debt capacity, we use the forecast and assume issuance of all the authorized debt. We structure the debt in the same way as we do the general fund debt capacity structure, which is a 20-year term with a 5.5% interest rate. Couture gave some history on that, but I also wanted to say for those who might have been curious, in 2022, this number was revised upwards to account for COVID and to take some of that into consideration. And we've been evaluating it annually ever since to make sure that our interest rate inputs are more than adequate for what we're trying to do. We also hold an indenture requiring unobligated net lottery proceeds, or what I call UNLP. Levels to be at a minimum of 4x MADS or maximum annual debt service coverage, or the debt service coverage may not exceed 25% of that unobligated net lottery proceeds. Basically, fancy way to say we make sure that the bills are paid and whatever we have left, we want to have a coverage above that 4x. Next slide, please. Now we're going to take a look at the forecast trends. Even though the estimate revisions for the 2023-2025 biennium are slightly lower at $1.845 billion from the prior forecast, the prior forecast was only at $1.85 billion, forecasts continue to show revenue rebounds in lottery with continued growth expected. Lottery revenues are running higher than the 21-23 biennium as the economy and consumer discretionary incomes continue steady growth. Lottery revenues available for transfer are expected to continue growing from the $1.845 billion all the way up to $2.24 billion in the 31-33 biennium. And this is up from both of the prior forecasts as well. Key factors contributing to continued growth in lottery revenue include Oregon's economic performance, video lottery sales and tracking. This is the biggest piece of lottery, and though it has been a little lower over the last year, it's still at a good spot. Consumer entertainment preferences and evolution of consumer tastes, competition for household entertainment dollars, and increased competition with the gaming industry are other factors that can contribute to how the lottery revenue continues to grow. Next slide, please. So as stated previously, the December 2024 OEA forecast provides for a strong rebound. Based on the forecast and using the average approach, issuance capacity is $564 million in each of the bienniums or $282 million annually over the forecasted period. This is also increased. It was 506.4 in 23 and 530 in 2024. So we're still showing increased capacity. Let's see. Next slide, please. So on this side, as previous with the general fund, we look at a lottery bond capacity sensitivity analysis. We can see that with a 10% increase or decrease in lottery revenue, we can see the capacity increase or decrease by approximately $367 million, respectively. And we see that a 1% increase in the interest rate results in a decrease of approximately $200 million to capacity, whereas a 1% decrease to the interest rate could see a capacity increase of upwards of approximately $227 million. And then when we look at the sensitivity and changes in lottery revenues and interest rates, we see a 10% decline over the period decreases capacity by approximately $367 million, and an increase in 10% would increase the capacity by approximately $367 million. Table also illustrates the potential impact of changing interest rates to the lottery capacity forecast, and based on the on average per triennium debt issuance of $564 million and estimates of lottery revenues for the balance of the forecast period. Remaining lottery capacity is $2.256 billion. Our interest rate sensitivity analysis indicates that a 1% increase decreases our capacity by that $200 million as previously stated. Well, the 1% rise in that is the $227 million. Are there any questions on lottery or the lottery revenue debt capacity? Okay. Thank you all very much. I think now I'm going to turn it over to Colin with net tax supported debt. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. I'm Colin Puzar, debt manager, and I'll be taking you all through the net tax supported debt section. Next slide, please. Net tax supported debt includes general fund supported debt, pension obligation bonds, certificates of participation, and other appropriations debt, lottery revenue bonds, and state highway user tax revenue bonds, as determined by the rating agencies in their evaluation of the state's overall long-term debt burden. Next slide, please. This chart contains the actual details of Oregon's net tax supported debt for fiscal years 22, 23, 24, and projected details for fiscal year 25. At the end of 2024's fiscal year, Oregon's net tax supported debt was $10.18 billion and was projected to increase to $11.82 billion by the end of the 2023 to 25 biennium. Net tax supported debt as a percent of personal income is expected to grow from 3.37% at the end of fiscal year 24 to a projected 3.71% by the end of the 2023 to 25 biennium. Next slide, please. This chart shows the components of Oregon's net tax supported debt as stacked lines compared to Moody's 50 state median as the green bars. Oregon's net tax supported debt per capita as of fiscal year 24 is $2,361, which is above the median of $1,189 for all states as listed by Moody's. And Oregon's net tax supported debt to personal income of 3.37% in fiscal year 24 is above the median of 2% for all other states. Next slide, please. Oregon currently ranks among the top states in terms of pension funding status, which is a measure of pension assets relative to pension liability. The chart below from S&P shows the pension funded ratio for states across the nation. Using fiscal year 23 data provided by S&P, Oregon ranked 15th highest among all states with a pension funded ratio of 82%. In October of 2021, PERS reduced the assumed rate of return from 7.2% to 6.9%, which was viewed favorably by the rating agencies. Next slide, please. This chart shows unfunded pension and OPEB liability per capita for fiscal year 23. The blue arrow points to Oregon, which shows Oregon's per capita unfunded pension and OPEB liability is among the lowest levels when compared to other states. Oregon ranks 19th lowest in pension and OPEB liability per capita among all states. And additionally, Oregon's fiscal year 2023 pension funded status of 82% is above the median for all states for the same period. Next slide, please. I will hand it over to Jaime to discuss the state debt issuance considerations.
Great, thank you. Before we move on, so in the past, we've gotten a couple questions regarding net tax supported debt and kind of things that we can, or why we rank kind of the way we rank. And I think a little, to add a little color to that, you know, the state as a whole in terms of area, we're in the top 10, you know, nationally. So and what comes with that is a large infrastructure needs, right, to repair our roads and bridges. But we rank kind of in the middle. I think we rank 27th in terms of population. So that burden is put on a much smaller base of population, which is why our ranking is kind of where it is. So obviously these are Moody's attempts to kind of do an apples to apples comparison nationwide, but some of the some of those terms in terms of demographics and area, it's kind of a challenge unique to the state. Okay, next slide. So here we've previously discussed some of these components of the state's debt, which include both general obligation and direct revenue debt. So the pie chart here on the left breaks down the general obligation debt for fiscal year 24. Again, Article 11 bonds represents approximately 48% of outstanding GO debt. On the right, we have direct revenue bond indebtedness. The highway user tax bond program is the largest component of these bonds. It represents about 51% of outstanding direct revenue debt. ODOT continues to have high demand for infrastructure improvement, so we expect this trend to continue into the future. Next slide. So the state maintains a very conservative debt service profile, with over 50% of our debt amortizing by the end of 2033, as shown here, which is our forecast period. So the remaining pension obligation bonds that are scheduled to fully amortize in 2027, and you can see that decline year over year in debt service in this chart from 27 to 28. The dotted line represents the maximum debt service at that 5% target. And lastly, the majority of bonds that are approved by the legislature are usually issued in the later part of the biennium in terms of par size, and we would continue to support a more even approach to issuing debt over the course of that biennium rather than saving the debt service to the next biennium. It helps us a little bit enter the market and cost average. Next slide. One more. The Oregon School Bond Guarantee.
Sorry, Mr. Alvarez, can I just say one quick thing about that?
Sure.
I am in the unique position of having been on both sides of this equation about when do we issue debt. And I would say this. I recognize the concern that the legislature has about issuing debt earlier in the biennium and therefore incurring debt service earlier in the biennium that takes away from other programmatic uses of general fund and lottery fund. That being said, we cannot get as good rates on our bonds if we're trying to issue too many at once and we're trying to flood the market. And so while in the short term, it is economically better for the state to hold and not authorize issuing the bonds until later in the biennium, I want to be really clear that it's better for the state and it's better for the budget overall if we spread our bond issuance out over the course of a biennium. So as the legislature engages in its budget process and bond authorization process for the 25-27 biennium, I urge you to continue to do what you've done, which is consult closely with the Treasury debt management team to think hard about how to spread that issuance out, the authorizations out over the course of the biennium to ultimately have the best impact on the state's budget. Is that a fair, did I miss anything in that, Mr. Alvarez?
No, that's exactly correct.
Okay. And I get Ms. Beidle and Mr. Campbell, the challenges that poses, and because I've been on the other side of this, but I do think it's an important reminder as the legislature thinks about debt, how do we think manage debt.
Thank you. So on this slide, we have the Oregon School Bond Guarantee Program. So this program is very valuable to local governments, school districts, and community colleges across the state. And the program has been heavily used over the last 10 years as depicted here in the chart. The light blue color shows the debt service associated with bonds issued by local school districts and community colleges that are guaranteed by the state. The state is currently guaranteeing about $9.6 billion of debt that has been issued by school districts and community college. Most of these school districts that borrow do have good credit ratings and utilize their general obligation backing for that debt as well. In terms of pension, pension bonds utilize a fund diversion agreement that are used to enhance the credit ratings and, if necessary, pay pension obligation bond debt service by the local governments. So these agreements make a claim on the money that's due to the local jurisdiction by which the funds would be deposited with the trustee to pay the bond debt service. The dark blue color on the graph represents the annual debt service of the pension bonds that are supported by these diversion agreements. Next slide. So the Treasurer's Office reports annually to the Commission and provides an annual report on the bonds issued by these public bodies, which contain information on the actual interest rates that they issued on these bonds and the projected rate of return on the bonds. In 2021, the MDAC approved administrative rules and amended to permit or provide guidelines for these municipalities to continue issuing pension obligation bonds under these new statutes. Since then, there has been approximately $1.9 billion in pension bonds issued. And with this high rate environment over the last couple of years, we've seen little to none pension bonds being issued. Next slide. So the demand for private activity bond volume cap continues nationwide, not just in the state, but nationwide. The volume cap is not really a bonding authority, but it's more the ability to issue tax-exempt bonds for qualified projects that have some type of private component. And those projects or those type of bonds would otherwise be taxable. The legislature authorizes each year in the biennium the volume cap that's to be used for the state. In 23, the legislature authorized in each calendar year, 24 and 25, $450 million of volume cap for housing, $58.5 million for the PAB committee to allocate, and $1 million for Oregon business for any other economic development projects. The amount of private activity bond volume cap that's available to each state is adjusted annually based on an IRS per capita factor. So utilizing the 23 population updates and the updated IRS per capita factor, the volume cap increased in calendar year 24 by 19.6 million and increased in 25 by 45.9 million. So with a continued focus on housing, the committee expects that significant competition will continue for this scarce resource. Next slide. An update on multifamily conduit issuance, the program. So over the last 7 years, you can see a sharp increase in issuance in these type of bonds. The primary purpose of the program has been to fund LIFT affordable housing and permanent supportive housing. These revenue bonds are issued on behalf of public and private entities for the development and rehabilitation of low-income multifamily housing. And during fiscal year 24, approximately 11 conduit bonds were completed, totaling about $254 million. And currently in this fiscal year, fiscal year 25, 13 deals have been completed for approximately $402 million. We're expecting that by the end of this fiscal year, we're going to close an additional six additional issuances for approximately $227 million. So to date, approximately $298 million in Article 11Q general obligation bonds have been issued to support the same LIFT and PSH programs. The remainder of the authorized $604 million is planned to be issued before the end of this fiscal year. So we're currently in our the end of our issuance cycle where we'll issue the remaining of those bonds. I will point out, though, in the chart, obviously, you can see a dip over the last 2 years. That is in response to housing making some modifications to its legal agreements with its lenders and developers to make sure that the LIFT program was in agreement with all the bond covenants under Article 11Q. That really more delayed production than anything. We expect the issuance to come back in 2025. So obviously, you can as I've gave the numbers before, we're expecting the 2020 at the end of fiscal year 2025, closer to like a $620 million issuance. So you'll see that bounce back come next year. Next slide. One more. So in conclusion, the December 2024 forecast shows a robust growth for the current biennium in general fund revenues and modest upside on lottery. The personal income tax kicker currently forecasted at about $1.8 billion. General fund revenues are forecasted to provide $8.9 billion of new general fund debt capacity for the coming four bienniums, so that averages at $2.2 billion, as Couture mentioned. And then on the lottery side, that provides for about $2.25 billion of new lottery debt capacity for the next four bienniums and $564 million for each biennium. The state continues to preserve strong credit ratings by maintaining prudent debt management practices, fiscal discipline, and strong liquidity position. So with that, you know, we thank you very much for your time and this opportunity to present, and we'll be happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank Mr. Alvarez and his whole team for a really useful presentation. And I realized that I had neglected to introduce some new members of my team. Somewhere on these screens, you will see Jessica Howell, who many of you know. She stayed on from Treasurer Reed's team to join our team as Director of Government Affairs. Barry Ford is our Chief Program Officer, and debt management is one of the divisions under his purview. And then Sybil Ackerman Munson is my Chief of Staff. Some of you will have met some of these people so far, and if not, you may well in the future. Okay, questions from commission members for the debt management team. Representative Nathanson, please.
Can you give us a signal when it will be time to review the report, the draft report that our name is on? And when it'd be appropriate to make comments about the material in the report?
Yes, absolutely. So we're hoping to try and deliver the report by the 27th. So if there's any comments on the report after your review, if you can get that to us by Tuesday the 21st, if possible. I know that's a quick turnaround. But we'll take any comments you have and incorporate into the report.
Did you have specific questions, Representative Nathanson? Because you should have already received.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I have had an opportunity to read some of the report, not all of the material, but certainly the first, 15 or 16 pages. I've read all of that material. And since the report is issued under the names of the commissioners, I thought it would be a good idea to just see if, in the past, we've had discussion among the commissioners, either discussion about did we want to actually say this or recommend this, or maybe a question about how something was phrased.
Yeah, that was what I said at the beginning of the meeting, Representative, that was the intent for this time period during the meeting. So if you have specific things that you have questions about, we urge you to raise them now.
Great. I have two or three and hope that I don't take up too much airtime to leave time for others. It's probably the first page. It's not the first page. It's the letter dated January 16th. I assume this is, it doesn't have a watermark that says draft, but it hasn't been sent yet, correct?
It goes correct. With the report.
Okay.
It's a cover for the report.
Great. There's a comment about interest rates, of course, and I wanted to just say in front of everybody, I continue to be concerned that in addition to base interest rates being lowered, there had been concern about inflation to address that, interest rates now being lowered, but yet mortgage interest rates continue to increase. And how is that going to affect the economy? How does that affect Oregon? How might it impact our report and our situation? It's not necessarily intuitive. Most people, when they hear, oh, interest rates are coming down, the evidence isn't there to show that's what's happening in the mortgage interest arena. The second question
let's take one of these at a time. Great. If we could, Representative, great, so that the team can address it. Mr. Alvarez, do you and your team want to address that?
Sure. I think so. Couture spoke to our assumptions that go into the model, and we made an adjustment back, I believe, in 22, where we raised interest rates. And granted, for the most part, at that point, we were entering a high interest rate environment. But to your point, the Fed started reducing rates over the last 3 or 4 months. But on the issuance side, when we for in terms of bond issuances, we have not seen an equivalent reduction in rates. If anything, it has just kind of reshaped the curve, the interest rate curve that we're actually the environment that we're issuing against. So similar to which was our thought process. So similar to mortgage rates, rates kind of have just stopped moving in that sense. So which is why we kept our conservative assumption of 5.5%, even though over the last, let's say, 2 or 3 years, we've been well under the 5.5% on the issuance side for both general obligation and lottery.
Does that answer your question, Representative? Oh, sorry, go ahead, Mr.
Vicente. Just to add to Jaime's point, the underlying rate 2 years ago was about 3.4%, and we were using 5.5%. That underlying rate has moved up closer to 4%, but we are at 5.5%. So we still have good cushion to take care of the fact that the longer rates have actually gone up. And I'm also sorry we didn't send you an email with the presentation before the meeting, but next year we'll be sure to do that.
So all that to say that the 5.5 that we're using currently is still pretty conservative in terms of real rates that we've been achieving over the last couple of years.
Okay.
If you want to follow up on that question, Representative, go ahead. If you want to move on to something new, it looks like Mr. Potowski has something that I want to give, sort of alternate back and forth if we could between great commission members.
Yeah.
Mr. Potowski?
Yes, thank you. And it is to follow up on Representative Nathanson's comments. You know, you do have somewhat of an oddity in the housing market now, where it tends to be raising up a little bit, but kind of holding still, as opposed to the rates that the state's going to face in terms of issuing their bonds. And what we also have is oddity. The real uncertainty is coming into the next, say, 4 years. We don't know about the impacts of tariffs. We don't know about all the programs that the new Trump administration may put forward, how much can they get passed. The fear is that the inflation could start to rear its ugly head again and go up. And in that case, the Federal Reserve, who already backed off. There were supposed to be at least three cuts in 2025. They're only talking two now. If they see the news that inflation is going, they could cut back. Stop cutting the rates. And at the extreme, they might even have to raise them. So there's uncertainty going forward, I think, for the next 4 years. But I still think the assumption that Treasury is using for the interest rates is probably about right. But there's a little bit higher risk in the near term, I think, than possibly what Treasury may be assessing.
Thank you. Mr. Thompson? You're muted, sir.
Apologies and thank you. I just wanted to follow up on what Commissioner Patowski said. We talked about it a little bit, Couture and I, when we were looking at our sensitivity analysis for the bonds. We understand that the interest rate environment is volatile right now, and we could have, like you had said, Commissioner, some of the inflation rearing its ugly head again. In that case, we've got that cushion that Couture and Jaime spoke about. And if we see some of those decreases more than expected, it will only show us some of the savings and an increase in our capacity. So sitting at this point, like I had stated previously, we try to evaluate it every time we come into it. And we certainly look at this one annually in this report and each one as it comes up with when we do our issuance, with our timing and how we're looking with the curves at those times. But we're certainly keeping an eye on those interest rates and have a knowledge that the changes in them will affect a lot of different things. But if we can keep on top of them, we can keep an eye on our forecast, we can keep an eye on our expenses, and we can make sure to stay within our estimates and be prepared to evaluate and change them in the future too.
And the last point that I would make about this, again, with my old ways and means hat on, is that generally speaking, the legislature is prudent enough not to allocate all of our capacity in the first year of the biennium, which is to say that by the time the 2025 session ends, they will not have allocated all of our capacity. So that on the off chance that interest rates go up substantially, there's a buffer about bonding capacity that has not been allocated, which could then not be allocated, which would again buffer us against debt service challenges related to the 5% of general fund and the 4-to-1 ratio for lottery, which I think is the other thing we can bear in mind as a mitigating factor.
Yep.
Representative Nathanson, did you have other questions or comments? I don't see any other hands up.
One other point. Maybe two. First of all, I would like to underscore what I heard Mr. Patowski mention, which is uncertainty over the next 4 years. I will add my individual take on this is I'm really very concerned about the possibility of certain federal actions, whether they are at the executive branch level, congressional, presidential, you know, at whatever level, maybe agency, it may be some federal statutory changes. I'm just really concerned about how that might impact Oregon, not directly on the question of how an interest rate is established, but how it affects the national and then therefore the state economy and what that's going to mean to our situation. I don't know whether mentioning this to a little bit more explicitly in a letter is appropriate, but I do have concerns.
I would say this, Oregon. If I could, Representative, I think a lot of us share your concerns. The statewide electeds are paying a lot of attention to this and looking closely. I mentioned that Ms. Howell, who had been formally designated as legislative director, is now designated as director of government affairs because we've expanded her purview to keep an eye on some federal things that are coming down, because we also worry about this and want to be attentive. On the other hand, we know that making major changes at the federal level is challenging, as we've seen before about new incoming presidents who've made significant promises or commitments and then have not actually managed to accomplish those because government is not designed to turn on a dime. So I would be reluctant to allude to that significantly in this. And I would also point out that the cover letter is not an official document. It's just prefatory remarks. And so I'm not sure that it's really useful to spend enormous amounts of time worrying about it. I mean, if there was something factually incorrect in there, I'd want to be sure that was corrected. But you know, the more compelling issue is the report itself. I'm not trying to minimize your concerns in the slightest, Representative, but I am just trying to put them in context of what we're thinking about.
Sure. Then my last point, I just want to be clear on the intent of it's the second to the last paragraph. Encourage setting aside some bonding capacity to ensure the state remains flexible, et cetera. Set aside some bonding capacity. Is that in addition to and beyond things like the rainy day fund and the school reserve fund?
That's what I was alluding to when I mentioned to Mr. Potowski that generally speaking, the legislature does not allocate the entire available capacity during the long session, but instead sets aside some of that as a buffer. So we're just continuing to urge the legislature to follow that practice and maybe even a little bit more in this context. So Mr. Potowski and then Senator Taylor.
Yes, just to reply, Representative Nathanson, just for your information, I gave a presentation to the Portland Rotary Club last Tuesday. And in my slideshow, I do these topics that you're concerned about. And what I can simply do is send that to you and, you know, for your information.
Thank you. We appreciate that. Senator Taylor.
Yes, I was wondering if they could go back to it was about halfway through the slide deck of looking at the overall debt. From I think it started at 2016 in the chart till now, something like that. I don't know, remember which slide it was. Please. It had the cumulative of all the different bonds. I think it was before that. Yeah. The debt capacity.
The slide number 3.
There you go. Someone knows what I'm talking about. Thank you. So the total of. So I'm just. Mainly, I just always want to be cognizant of how we are for practices with other states. And so this increase of the other GO debt going from 8, it looks like, up to 11 something, and again that's over 10 years. I assume that that's considered normal and healthy. I'm going to assume the best. I'm a little bit surprised that I just want to make certain we're not just getting used to using all of these to pay for things. So is this all a health, is that an okay increase? Is that kind of what all the other states are doing?
Mr. Alvarez?
Sure, I can speak to that. So it's two parts. One part is you can see that we were going away from other forms of debt that was being issued, like appropriation credits. That's kind of fading away.
Okay, I just needed to have someone educate me about why these shifts. Instead of it just seeing constant, I see that the appropriations went away, the pensions decreased. So walk me through that, please. Yeah.
And sure. And the other part of it is that we obviously use the 5% target as our threshold of issuing debt. So although you see a small uptick of issuing debt, we've remained well under that 5% or at the 5% which is overall nationwide still a very conservative target as related to general fund revenues. So what this really shows is that our general fund revenues have increased at that same slope or even higher to be able to support that general fund, that overall indebtedness that we've been issuing.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. And then the only other thing I noticed different from or a little bit different from last year was because we're going into the legislative session, and although for some reason people are using the term transportation package, which I don't know why they're calling it that, because it's really about stabilizing the ODOT, and there most likely won't be new projects. There was a slide about the transportation bonds and wondering what the plan was about what could be issued, because I assume they're going to have to turn, there'll be a level of bonding in order to pay for some of the transportation needs that have yet to be, you know, we have all these different projects. And so some sort of new issuance will probably happen this, I think there'll be a request at least this session. And I was just wondering, I can't remember which slide it was for the transportation one.
Slide 25.
25, yeah.
Thank you. Someone remembering the exact slide numbers. Thank you.
So I think the difference, so what we're trying to show here is the difference between one general obligation that's supported by general fund dollars versus direct revenue. And ODOT, for the most part, has been direct revenue. And,
right.
With these other programs. So I think to your point, you know, there's if there is a package or if there is additional funding that's granted towards ODOT, the review that would have to be is tying that to existing revenues to be able to support that debt, or whether some general fund dollars will be directed towards ODOT purposes. But that's kind of the discussion that would have to be held.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. That gives me some assurance. So it just seems like people are like, oh, we'll just, you know, bond to these different, I'm like, it's not that easy or straightforward. Go ahead.
We also issued Garvey bonds, grant anticipation revenue bonds, which basically collateralizes debt from monies received from the federal government. So it's a bit of a diversification. Mm-hmm. So that was the first time we issued last year. So that also helps raise money for the program.
Oh, okay. I was not aware of that. Thank you. All right. Thank you. Those were my questions.
Great. Any other questions for the team at this point? Okay. Excellent. We now move into a public comment section. Do we have anybody signed up for public comment? Cool. Moving right along. Our next job is to vote on the report. Commission members, you will still have the opportunity over the next few days, as Mr. Alvarez said, to offer comments and send them in to him by next Tuesday, the 21st. So if you do have questions or concerns, please email them to him ASAP over the next couple of days. But what we will do now is take a vote on the report with the assumption that there won't be any really major changes. Could I have a motion to that effect, please? From one of the voting members of the commission? Because I'm not a voting member, I'm ex officio, I would remind people. So could somebody make a motion to approve that report, Senator Taylor?
I'll motion.
Okay.
We do that.
Thank you, Mr. Potowski. Okay. Voting members of the commission, Senator Taylor, how do you vote?
Taylor votes aye.
Representative Nathanson?
Aye.
Mr. Potowski?
Abstain, because I am so new and I had nothing to do with this report that is coming in, if that's acceptable.
It's acceptable. We've got a majority of the thing. If there are ways that
excuse me, process? Process clarification, please.
Yeah.
Is one allowed to abstain?
I don't know, actually. Can somebody help me out here? It's my first time chairing this.
Yeah, I'd like clarification. Process, just want clarification, please.
Uh, who can help me with this? Because this question didn't come up at all. In committees, we're allowed to abstain.
Not in the legislature.
Other committees, I guess. Mr. Potowski, I get that you haven't been on the commission before, but you got the report in advance. Do you have any significant concerns about it?
No, I can change this, but when you say I got it in advance, I got it Friday. So that's
true.
A 222-page document. But I don't want to hold things up, so I will say yes.
Okay, thank you. And we'll clarify that other question and get back to you, all to the commission members next week, so that when we clarify that.
Madam Treasurer?
Yeah.
I don't know if it would make Mr. Potowski any more comfortable, but I'll just tell everybody and make sure it's publicly available. I do intend to submit some suggestions for slight changes in wording that I think might help clarify something. As you said, no major changes, but it's a report with our name on it. There are just a few places where I think, you know, a word here or there or something might help.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Senator Taylor?
Yes. Can I just get clarification from somebody of that? You mean, usually there's a motion and then there's discussion. And so we went right into, we had questions and
I'm
then
sorry,
a motion,
I thought
and then
that
we went right into voting.
Yeah, I understand. I thought that the discussion had been held as part of the question, saying if you prefer us to rescind the vote and have further discussion, we can. I would have expected people to bring things up under the discussion period we had earlier. You're technically
correct. I was just curious about what the process was.
Yeah,
but then
you are technically correct, and I didn't quite do that correctly, but I made the assumption about the discussion.
The other point I just wanted to ask about is we did receive it on Friday, and I'm not going to die on the sword on this, but I don't remember in the past that the turnaround, that the calendar worked this way. I thought that there was a longer period of time, but I don't know. I would need someone from the treasurer to, does it state how long there needs to be between receiving the report and when the vote needs to occur? Is that stated or is that simply silent?
I can kind of speak to that. So typically it is a quick turnaround, and that's usually because of the timing of and distribution of the report. We usually try to get the report and distributed before session starts, so it could be everybody has it available. And usually we try to present the earlier part of the year, and it sometimes makes it difficult with people coming off of vacation for the new year. But it usually, as when we provide a report, it usually is at least a week before the vote. We have reconvened in the past, but again, that just delays the distribution of the report itself.
Senator Taylor, as you can imagine, this is my ninth day on the job. And so we have a variety of things that Mr. Alvarez and his team and I have already been talking about, Mr. Ford. And so I think you bring up some valid points. We can have a conversation. We will have a conversation internally with Treasury, and then we'll loop in the folks from DAS and LFO to have a little bit more conversation about the timing of this meeting. The reality is that the legislature doesn't actually do bond authorization until relatively late in session. So on the one hand, the legislature having it early is helpful just for general thought purposes. On the other hand, having a precise number in January before session starts may not actually be necessary. So we will take your concerns about timing under consideration as we think about the report itself. I also will, to be clear, and I'm not saying anything I haven't said directly to Mr. Alvarez, and Mr. Ford agrees with me, we're going to take a hard look at the report and see if we can break it out into different sections, some of which could be standing pieces, some of which might serve the legislature and other people better if they were broken out into separate reports. So it may be that in future years, both the timing of this meeting and how the report is structured are different. And we will certainly loop commission members in on those conversations.
Well, just to be really clear, I wasn't stating an objection. I was asking just what is the actual process. So just to say, I did not state an objection.
No.
So I was asking, what can one abstain? It's just a yes or no, because whether or not it's allowed. And then two, what is the requirement for the report to be distributed before voting? They're just process questions. And so that's all. Thank you.
No, I appreciate it, but I think your process questions raise some valid concerns. And those are some of the things we'll talk about internally. We just did not have the bandwidth to talk about them between January 6th when I was sworn in and January 16th. So we were all a little stuck to get a lot done in a short period of time. So we've had a vote. We've approved the report subject to the minor changes. We will make sure that all the commission members know about any changes that are getting incorporated. We don't anticipate anything major. Mr. Alvarez, anything else for the good of the order?
No, that's all. We'll make sure and circulate any changes to the report and the final copy for you all.
Okay. Ms. Leslie, you've been pretty quiet. Anything else you want to add?
No, just here to help with whatever you need going forward. So we're a resource. Great. Let us know how we can be helpful.
Thank you very much. Anything from Team LFO?
I don't have anything. Amanda had to drop for another meeting. LFO's got
thank
nothing.
You,
appreciate all the hard work.
Appreciate it. Okay. Well, then with that, if I've done all this correctly, I think we're adjourned. Thank you all very, very much. Talk to you soon.